Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Jim. I'm a little bit concerned about this episode.
Why?
Well, is it safe for work?
Oh, yeah, it's safe for work, but it may not be safe for your relationship.
Maybe I shouldn't watch this movie.
Okay, we had to relocate on the deck because it was so ungodly hot.
Man,
in
it was
the
incredible.
Sun.
As soon as Echo Park Jimmy started talking about summer songs, the sun came out and started roasting us.
Man, so we moved to a shadier spot.
Yeah, look at that. We got another vista for you video viewers.
Yeah,
you can really see the furniture nicely from here, though. I really like that view.
Yes, so.
And the sun's not shining off my bald head and blinding others.
All right, so here we are out on the deck. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we are going to revisit a very popular new feature of the show.
People are already talking about it.
So popular the first time we did it that it just blew up. It was crazy. There was so much buzz and excitement.
Yep.
It's At the Movies. Jim at the Movies.
Jim at the Movies.
Yes.
Yeah, we're still waiting for Mike Wagner's theme music to come in.
Yes.
Even though the new feature has only been out for 3 days, we need,
that's right.
need some speed here, Mike. Come on, buddy.
So basically, when I see a music-related movie, I'm going to talk about it. It can be a new movie.
Sounds great.
It can be an older movie. It can be any of those things. I happened to watch two movies over the weekend, music-related. On Saturday, watched one movie in the afternoon and then watched another one later that evening.
Okay.
It was, a glorious weekend.
Yeah, that sounds
good. So I'm going to talk about both of them. The first one, and these are both relatively new movies.
Okay.
The first one is a documentary about Woodstock.
Oh, fantastic. Perfect timing.
This is not the original Woodstock film. That was a concert film.
Yes.
This is a 50th anniversary documentary that tells you the story of how the festival came together and how it
went off.
And it was originally aired on PBS.
Okay.
And if you watched it, I think you got a tote bag or something like that. Right? So, anyway, I did not watch it on PBS. I watched it on Netflix. It's on Netflix now.
Excellent.
So anybody who subscribes to that, you can go in and watch this film. It is called Woodstock, 3 Days That Defined a Generation.
Okay.
Well, I came apart, the child of God. He was walking along the road, and I asked him, tell me, where are you? Now, what makes this movie very effective is they have tons of footage. I mean, there's some bits of live performance kind of sprinkled throughout, but that's really not the point of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's really more about how they pulled this thing off, right? And we've all heard the stories about, you know, how chaotic it was.
Yeah.
And I think to many people, I think the story of Woodstock is that it was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've done any research on the festival, and even in our conversation that we had with Andy Zaks, who produced the new remastered box set of Woodstock music, anybody who actually knows about Woodstock would actually argue that point, that it was, they would say it was not a disaster. It was not a fire fest kind of thing. This movie really shows you how in the face of a lot of adversity, they persevered, the people persevered, and they pulled this thing off against like really insane difficulties, right?
Okay.
To points many times where, you know, I don't know about you, I would have just said, to hell with this. This, you know, forget it.
Yeah.
I don't know how they kept pushing through. So let me just tell you a little bit about how the movie is filmed. They have tons of archival footage.
Okay.
You know, organizers, they have, you know, footage of Max Yazger. They have footage in the town. They have footage of people who attended the festival, all this kind of stuff. But what was really good about it is the voices that you hear, the people telling the story, are all like audio recordings. And I don't know how exactly they got all this stuff, because it's not necessarily, I think very little of it is actually like newly recorded interviews.
Oh, okay.
Because you got 50 years later, right, a lot of these people aren't with us anymore, you know? So I think a lot of it is they compiled recordings from other sources. They sourced this material. There's probably some new stuff in there as well. There's, it goes everywhere from, you know, like I said, the key organizers of the festival, some of the performers, but, you know, some of the people who just attended, right, talking about it.
By 1969, it really did feel like we were finally winning some kind of cultural war against the establishment.
Young people were rejecting the status quo. The one thing that affected everybody was the war in Vietnam.
But it's not a talking head kind of movie. You don't see these people talking to the camera. You see footage throughout. And then, like, in the bottom left, it'll say, you know, it'll identify who's speaking.
Oh, okay.
It'll say, you know, audio recording of. And you'll hear that person talking. It's really effective.
That's
it's really neat. Really beautifully put together. And
chronological?
It is.
Okay.
I mean, it very effectively, a great filmmaking technique. They start with sort of an opening scene, and then they go back.
Right.
And they tell the story chronologically.
So prologue.
It starts with the storm coming in.
Oh, neat.
And sort of like you see, you know, the announcer, you know, telling people, get off the towers, all stuff. And you can see, I mean, there's great footage of like the black clouds.
Massive in the summer thunderstorm.
Right,
yeah.
In the distance. That happened on day three, I think. Uh-huh. That was on Sunday. But so they sort of like starts with that, and then you don't see what happens. And then it goes back and tells you the story from the very beginning of like how the idea came to be.
Cool.
You know, what they were trying to accomplish. But the thing is, as I mentioned, the various hurdles that they had, you know, probably the biggest one, and the movie does a good job of sort of putting this festival in context with the times and the place, right?
Very important.
So you got to remember, 1969 in, you know, upstate New York, Woodstock itself, the town of Woodstock, was sort of an artist community. So originally they were going to hold the festival in a town called Wallkill.
Wallkill, that's
right.
Yeah.
And they had the permits and everything. And it literally at like the 11th hour, the town passed a law that said you couldn't have any gathering of more than like 5,000 people, I think it was, or something like that. Right.
Right.
So they had the rug pulled out from under them. And so then just, but they wanted to pull this thing off. They wanted to make it happen. And I think at that point they'd already sold tickets too. So they wanted to make this thing happen. They ended up finding, sort of by luck, they found this guy, Max Yazger, had a dairy farm, and they held it on his farm, on his property in Bethel, New York.
Bethel.
And so my point on all this, I don't want to go through the whole story of Woodstock, but my point of all this is that you see that right from the beginning, they had major problems, and yet they kept going, you know, and they, and then the next big problem was that they realized they didn't have enough time to construct everything the way they wanted. And that's why there was no perimeter fence, because they had to make a decision literally like a week before.
Yeah.
Do we finish the stage or do we put the perimeter
fence
on, you know? So, you know, do what you got to do. You know, so of course, you know, it became this just overrun, way bigger than they expected, 400,000 people, right? And it just became a free thing. And then later on, I mean, really kind of like jaw-droppingly amazing when you see like that they run out of food, that they run out of medical supplies.
Yeah.
But yet, again, they found a way. Like in the case of food, literally people in Bethel donated food keep it going. And we're talking like this is a small, like little bucolic kind of town.
Yeah.
Didn't want necessarily to be overrun with hippies, but they helped out.
The people of White Lake and Bethel literally went in their pantries. Anything that was in the refrigerator, anything that was in the freezer, anything that was in the house, they contributed.
We got word over WVOS that a lot of kids didn't have anything to eat. stuff was taken over to the school and they flew it to the site. I have a 19-year-old myself, and I felt that you got to give them a fair shake here. Kids are hungry. You got to feed them.
I did not know this either. There's some great footage of Nelson Rockefeller, who at various points during the festival was talking about calling in the National Guard and breaking it up.
Right. Wow.
And they
he
have
was the
like,
governor of New York.
Governor
at the
of
time.
New York, yep. Right. They had aides, you know, quoted on this recordings of saying, like, you know, we basically had to, you know, talk him out of that. Like, imagine that, right?
Good
this
Lord.
Would have been before,
oh my God,
you know, Kent State, yeah. Right? And things like that. I mean, who knows what could have happened, right?
Right.
But instead, what happened was the National Guard brought in medical supplies.
Wow.
Army helicopters landed. There's this great footage, like army helicopters coming in and landing, and these, you know, hippies going like, you know,
wow.
You gotta remember, this is Vietnam
yeah,
era.
Exactly.
I was standing on stage, and I could see these QEs coming in. There were three or four of them in a row. And all I said was, ladies and gentlemen, the United States Army.
The United States Army has led us some medical teams. There are 45 doctors who are here without pay because they dig what this is into. They're with us, man. They are not against us. They are with us. They're here to give us all a hand and help us.
The one other thing that was really, really cool to see was Wavy Gravy and the Hog Farm. And there's some great footage of that. You know, they were hired to be security.
Yeah.
And they called themselves the Please Force. And nice. They kind of kept everybody mellow. It's
wow.
really kind of an amazing thing. It's so different from Altamont,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. It's, just those few months later.
Yeah.
Where there was antagonism.
Right. And when you see, when you just see the helicopter shots and you see the mass of people, it's really unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't believe that there were that many people for this thing, right? And then, and how they managed to make it happen, pull it off, and, you know, without any real problems, without any real tragedy, nothing, you know? It pretty much happened. You know, and of course, everybody knows they had to airlift the musicians in because the roads were all clogged and people actually just parked on the highway at some point, you know? And so, but it's really well done. So check that out. The movie is called Woodstock, 3 Days That Defined a Generation.
Okay.
As I said, you can find it on Netflix. The director is Barack Goodman.
Okay.
And I really, really enjoyed that a lot.
Okay. Great. Fantastic. What was the biggest takeaway you had from watching the movie, like the biggest impression you were left with after seeing it?
I think, you know, probably, as I just mentioned, I think the thing that you don't really get a sense of even just reading about it, like, I really was taken with the whole hog farm thing,
interesting,
you know,
yeah.
And they showed those people and they couldn't have looked more like, from our perspective today, 50 years later, they almost look like they're cast to play that part.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Central casting.
That's right. Like, they couldn't be look more like they're on like the Smothers Brothers or something playing a part of a hippie.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
So you're thinking like, how can this be security? But somehow they did. They have footage of them. They apparently took it very seriously.
Yeah, I bet.
And they have footage of them interacting with the crowd and keeping everybody cool. And
the police chiefs were myself and Tom Law. We turned it into fun.
They gave a nice flavor to the festival. We paid them $18,000. Remember that?
I don't remember paying them anything. I thought we just chartered the jet.
Maybe that's what that cost. Maybe that's where the 18 grand went.
They did it just because they wanted to be there and because they felt that they could be useful. They're really nice people.
You know, they talked about how they never told anybody to do anything. They would ask them very nicely, please wait in line here for this bus or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And it seems unreal when you watch it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And there was a whole other part of the festival too, you know, the
music and arts fair,
right?
Yeah,
so there was a whole different part of the grounds, like sort of in the woods, where you could go, and they had artisans and booths and stuff like that. And it was really interesting to see footage of that too, because I don't think people just think of the Who and Janis Joplin,
right? Hendrix,
right.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting.
Oh, the Hendrix thing I'll say too, it's really amazing when you see that live. That came after the storm.
Yep.
And a lot of people had already left. Andy Zaks talked about this when we interviewed him. Yep. But I guess I don't know about you. I never quite made the connection until it was people were talking about this and were pointed out that when he played the Star Spangled Banner and the way he did, you know, the various kind of like sound effects with his guitar to make it like the rockets ready, you know, all that stuff, right? The bombs bursting in air, all of that, that was really like to most people connected to Vietnam, right? That was sort of a commentary in some way on like Vietnam.
Right.
And just to see footage of people, the looks on people's faces that they had when they were watching him perform that song, it must have been completely again like sort of unreal to people.
What am I hearing exactly
it was I think hard to process. We've heard that a million times now,
right.
Imagine hearing that for the first time.
Well, and that's part of it too, is there's no way for us to recreate the mindset that was current at that time in the socio-political environment, and there was so much resistance to the war and all those things, and don't trust anyone over 30 and, you know, all that stuff that was happening.
But the fact that they actually, you know, Max Yasgur became a big champion of this thing. It was pointed out in there that he was conservative himself.
Oh, wow.
You know, but the reason why he let people use his property was he was a conservative in sort of a libertarian sense.
Oh, okay.
And he didn't like that, you know, these people wanted to have this gathering and they were being, you know, told
not to.
So he was like, hey, come on out and do it here. And he became a big fan of it as it kept happening, and to the point where he came out and addressed the crowd.
Yes,
you know,
I remember seeing that part.
And and he really thought, you know, that these kids deserved this, and the fact that they were just, you know, it was all peaceful.
That's amazing.
He became a big fan of the whole experience and really loved it.
I'm a farmer. I don't know. I don't know how to speak to 20 people at one time, let alone a crowd like this. But I think you people have proven something to the world. Not only to town of Bethel or Sullivan County or New York State, you've proven something to the world. The important thing that you've proven to the world is that 500,000 kids, and I call you kids because I have children older than you are, 500,000 young people can get together and have 3 days of fun and music and have nothing but fun and music. And I God bless you for it.
And you also have to think about this, too. Imagine you're in his position. You know, a successful local businessman, you know, he apparently had, I mean, it was a big dairy farm that supplied, you know, so whole, you know, big region. By the way, I didn't know people boycotted his product because he allowed Woodstock to happen. But also he, imagine the nightmares he probably was having, thinking like, if things go wrong on this, you know, I mean, honestly, this wasn't said in the film, but think about this. Like he, you know, if something really bad happened, he could have been prosecuted.
Exactly.
Right. You know what I mean?
Right. His whole 400,000
people
could have burned down. Yeah, exactly. He would have been held responsible. Yeah, exactly.
Like legally and you know, civilly and possibly criminally. Who knows what could have happened to this guy? Mm-hmm. So, you know, the fact that again, I think really it's a lesson in sort of perseverance and not to be kind of too hippy-dippy about this, but it's like sort of like togetherness, you know, the fact that people came together and didn't cause any problems.
It's pretty amazing.
It's kind of amazing. Mm-hmm. You can't go to an NFL game without people causing problems, right?
No, you can't. You can't go anywhere pretty much in public these days.
That's right.
Do you think the people from Wallkill kind of regret the fact that they didn't have it?
I don't
based
know.
Based on everything that happened since?
I don't know.
50 years of tourism.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe it wouldn't have come off the same way.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
that's very true.
Kind of an amazing
amazing may have
event.
Never happened.
Okay. So anyway, check that out.
Cool.
That was really cool.
I will do it.
going to talk about another movie, very different.
All right, just a minute.
Before we do that, though, we're going to promote another festival.
That's right.
Right? A festival that's happening in Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville.
Called Bourbon and Beyond.
That's right.
The Beyond part relates to music, but the Bourbon part is also very interesting, right?
Yeah, exactly right. Bourbon pretty much. Well, I don't know. You go to Louisville, anyone who's been there, you run across bourbon places pretty much on every street corner, which is pretty cool. Very ingrained in Kentucky culture, especially Louisville. But Friday, September 20th, Saturday, September 21st, Sunday, September 22nd, at the Highland Festival Grounds in Louisville, Bourbon and Beyond Festival, Robert Plant, Hall & Oates, Squeeze, Jenny Lewis, ZZ Top, Kurt Vile, Margot Price, Little Steven, and the Disciples of Soul.
Wow.
And our good friends White Reaper are all going to be there. Best of all, Jim, I'm going to be there as well, hanging around, watching some of the bands, and doing some interviews for Suburbs Pod.
Yeah.
And even better, we have a weekend pass, 2 tickets to give away to the festival.
That's amazing.
Isn't it cool?
Yes. This is not a freebie. You can't just crash the gates.
Mm-mm.
You got to have tickets.
Can't go through the woods in the back way. Get in.
If you want to buy tickets, you go to bourbonandbeyond.com.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. We have one pair.
We do.
Just for Saturday and Sunday
for your weekend.
Yep. That we're going to give away, and you can enter that random drawing, by going to our Twitter.
Yep.
Or our Instagram,
mm-hmm,
at Suburbs Pod,
mm-hmm,
and tweeting at us, or whatever the verb is, instaing us with the hashtag, what is it, rocking for free tickets.
No requirement what the tweet or the post has in it.
Nope.
Anything you want. If
yep.
it's somebody you want to see, or
well,
just a picture of yourself with your hand out waiting for tickets to be put into
there
it.
There you go.
Yeah, that works too. But
yeah,
you got to use the hashtag rocking for free tickets.
Right.
You can enter once per platform per day. So if you really want these tickets, you go and you do one Twitter post and one Instagram post each day, and that's 2 entries for you in the hopper.
Very cool. A lot of fun. All right. Let's move on to the next movie here.
All right.
Da-da-da. This is a movie, fictional movie, music related, called Juliet Naked.
Okay.
Juliet, she waits in darkened corners. You'll never find her there, because her hair is undefined. I call this color Juliet. Juliet, she's cutting diamonds with a smile. Because she lies, she'll leave your life in fragments, my one true Juliet.
Have you heard of this movie?
Does it have to do with Juliana Hatfield?
Juliet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Juliet.
I misheard you.
Yeah.
No, I have not heard of it.
Juliet Naked. Now, before you get too excited,
okay,
let me explain that.
Too late.
Juliet is a record album.
Oh.
It's a title of an album.
Oh, okay.
And the naked part is a demo version of the recordings.
All right.
So there you go. But that's kind of exciting.
Yeah,
too,
that is
right?
Kind of exciting.
So here's the whole thing.
All right.
This movie feels like it was made for you, Patrick.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you right now for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's written by Nick Hornby.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go, right there. The high fidelity guy.
Right.
So you got that. Number two, one of the main characters is played by Chris O'Dowd.
Oh, fantastic.
Who was Roy in the IT Crowd.
IT Crowd, yes.
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again?
And has appeared in
many other
films since then.
But we know him as Roy, of course.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So he plays this guy named Duncan. It's set in England. This movie came out just last year.
Okay.
And I watched it on Amazon Prime. So if you have Amazon Prime, you can watch it there. It's new to Amazon Prime, and it was a recommendation from one of our listeners.
Oh, fantastic.
Who, on the Facebook, said, you guys got to check this out. You're
going to
really like it. So that's where, I can't remember who exactly. I'm sorry. But I did check it out. Here's the premise of the movie. Again, I think this is pretty much for us and our listeners,
yeah,
the Suburbs Pod community, and I don't know who else would be attracted to this movie, but it's perfect for us. So here's the premise. Chris O'Dowd plays this guy named Duncan. He has a girlfriend named Annie. She was played by Rose Byrne.
Okay.
Chris O'Dowd's character is completely obsessed with this singer-songwriter named Tucker Crowe.
Okay.
But he hasn't put anything out in like 25 years.
Okay.
Okay. So he's a reclusive artist.
All right.
Right. But he put out music that this guy is just obsessed with. And the album Juliet is like his masterpiece.
Okay.
But it's been 25 years since that came
out.
Got it. So now, right there. I mean, I don't know. Do people really get that obsessed about certain artists?
Maybe.
Maybe. So he's very, he also runs a, like a blog website kind of thing. That's like a tribute to this guy, Tucker Crowe. That's how obsessed
cool.
he is.
All
right. So then the news comes out where that there's a special re-release of that album, Juliet, but it's like the demos, right?
Fascinating.
Coming out 25 years later.
Okay,
so he's very
cool.
excited. It's called Juliet Naked.
Okay.
And he goes and he does a review and he posts on his website and all that kind of stuff. Right. Then his girlfriend Annie, who doesn't quite understand the obsession,
but puts up with it.
Puts up with it. Yes, yes. I think she's described in many of the press materials as, you know, long-suffering girlfriend of Duncan, right?
We all may relate to that.
All right, so there you go. So then she posts something on the website, like in the comments, about how it's like a cash grab or that kind of thing,
wow.
right? And so then she gets a response, like a direct message or an email or something, but it not for public consumption, but basically agreeing with her that, yes, it's a cash grab.
Mm-hmm.
And that message came from Tucker Crowe, the artist.
Really?
Okay?
How interesting.
You nailed it. I couldn't have explained it better myself. All good things.
Get me.
Tucker Crowe. P.S. The folks on that website, they seem pretty weird. So I'd be grateful if you didn't pass on the address. Thanks.
So then, not to give too much away here,
I'm not going
to go more into the plot here, but they develop a friendship that the obsessive guy doesn't know about.
Oh, how interesting.
So sort of like
that?
Behind his back, she's talking with his favorite singer.
His idol.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes. And
how neat.
To the point, and then eventually, because he's an American, eventually he comes over to England and they meet and so on and so forth. It goes on from there. Tucker Crowe is played by Ethan Hawke.
Oh, okay.
And it's really funny because a lot of the stuff you see, a lot of the pictures of Ethan Hawke as sort of the young rocker from 25 years ago really reminds me of Reality Bites.
Oh, okay.
He has that sort of look, you know, that kind of long hair,
disheveled,
grungy kind of guy, right? But, you know, a young, good-looking guy, right?
You could
rock star sort of quality to him.
Yep.
When you see the current version of Tucker Crowe, because nobody's really seen this guy. He's a recluse, right? The current version of him, though, is, you know, he's middle-aged. He's got the graying hair. He's got sort of the beer belly. He's very sort of disheveled, you know? And it's very funny. It's very funny to see that. And then not only that, but he is not living the rock star lifestyle. He lives in like a garage.
Oh, really?
That's like an off building, I think, to like his ex-wife or something like that. You know, he's just, you know, that's his current state.
A ring of truth.
Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, I'm thinking to myself, you know, I think from time to time you read these stories about people who you thought were probably living this great lifestyle because you loved their music so much and so did all of your friends, and you know, you're figuring they sold all these records, they must be doing great, but years later you've come to learn that they like have to sell things, you know, memorabilia or stuff that they have, their guitars or that kind of stuff, just to kind of like pay the rent or make ends meet, and it seems so sad.
That is really interesting.
And that, you know, the movie sort of explores that
how
dynamic at
that's
well,
great
right
very cool.
So Nick Hornby, of course, a big music guy,
really big.
And so I think he writes from, you know, he writes with authenticity here. I think he knows probably you know,
absolutely,
people like
I'm
this
I'm sure
and
he
it's
does.
A very interesting story that way
that
and
sounds
it goes off there
very intriguing.
Some of the music that you hear in the film, by the way, was written by guys like Robin Hitchcock and Connor Oberst and M. Ward, stuff like that. And there is a soundtrack on
So they create
the
original music for this musician that supposedly makes up this Juliet album?
Yeah, I mean...
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, they wrote this music for the film that Ethan Hawke then
plays.
Performs,
got it.
Right?
That's what I'm saying.
Within the context of the film, it's Tucker Crowe's music, right?
Right, yeah, okay, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there you go.
That's awesome.
Juliet Naked. Check that out.
Yeah,
it's only
that
like
really good.
It's only like a little over an hour and a half. Yeah,
perfect.
It's a pretty quick little movie.
Okay.
It's really enjoyable.
Okay.
If I think anybody, like I said, who's been obsessed with a certain artist,
yeah,
you know, we'll get a kick out of that. It sort of pokes holes into the whole thing.
And
you know, I think you have to enter it too, for, you know, with a certain sense of humor about yourself.
Yes.
Right.
Perfect. I will say too, for those who may not know, Nick Hornby wrote a really cool book called Fever Pitch. That's about his early obsession with Arsenal, the Arsenal. So that's a fun book if you like the football too.
Yes, but I would not recommend that movie.
I've heard it's terrible.
I haven't seen
it.
And
I never watched it because apparently it kind of ruins the book if you love the book. So
I've
stayed away.
I haven't seen it either, but they made it. It's Americanized.
Yeah.
It's about the Red Sox.
That's right. Yeah, they Jimmy
and
Fallon.
And it stars
did.
Jimmy Fallon.
Yes. Yeah, that's
and,
right.
So
and Drew Barrymore.
So let's just move on.
Yeah, let's stay away from that.
Okay. All right, there you go. Those are the two movies.
Yep.
The Woodstock
Excellent,
movie
Jim.
And the Juliet Naked. All
Thank
right.
you, man.
I'll
so
let
small
you know.
Screen movies. On your first installment, you went big screen.
Yeah.
So now you're small screen. This is great.
I will
Thank
say,
you.
My wife watched Juliet Naked also, and she thought it was really
wonderful.
Fun.
Okay.
She really liked it a lot. Again, I think she could relate
you know,
to the Annie character.
I was going
to
say, this might be one Sheila would like because she loves the IT crowd and certainly is long-suffering. So you may have hit upon something here.
All right, there you go.
Excellent
Let's get out of here.
Sir.
We'll do At the Movies again somewhere down the line
okay.
when I see more movies. All right. If anybody out there has movie recommendations, let me know.
Let's do it.
Let me know. So the way you can do that, you can email us, rock@suburbspod.com,
mm-hmm.
or you can tweet us, Facebook us, Instagram us, all those at @suburbspod.
Yep.
Or if you've seen these movies and you want to call and make comments, we can put your voice on an upcoming episode. Call
612-440-1984.
All right. And full disclosure here, if it, you know, anyone meets me, gray hair, the beer belly, all of that, you know, I'm not trying to be somebody I'm not.
Take it easy.
That's right.
Take it easy on Jim.
Yeah. All right.
Nice work, sir.
Let's get out of here.
Okay.
What do we have tomorrow?
Tomorrow coming up, I believe we're going to have some fan mail over some recent episodes we've done. Yeah,
some new music.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get caught up on some fan mail where people make new music recommendations. Let's do that.
Okay.
It's Rock of the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
By the time we got to Woodstock, we were half a million strong.
Well, the hog farm has been hassled by security people, and they're calling you security people. So how do you feel about the name?
Well, I feel secure. I don't know what security people means. I never was called a security person before. In fact, you're the first person that's ever called me that. How do you feel?
Well, I feel...
Do you feel secure?